Hi, this is Holger from UX Cafe, and you're about to listen to another episode. Normally we talk in a mixture of German and American English. This time again, it's a complete English episode. And remember, we're still in beta, so we want your feedback. After you listen to this, go to uxcafe.de and drop us a comment and spread the word if you can. But now, have fun listening. UX Cafe.
Hi, this is the UX Cafe, and my name is Stefan.
I'm Holger.
And I'm Tom.
You're listening to a new episode, and this time we have
a treat for you.
Yeah. In May, UX Camp happened in Berlin, and each of us gave a talk. And in this episode, we'd like to present Tom's talk to you. It's about personas, zombie personas, and Tom, what's in one sentence the topic?
Basically that you don't have an option, you have to have personas.
Either you have zombies or you have living ones.
Exactly. Either you have good personas, and if you choose not to have good personas, you will have zombies.
Okay. So, we are tuning in into the talk, and see you later. Have fun.
Okay, so I don't know what the title was this morning, but it's the gist is the same. Personas, love them or hate them. My thesis is you can't not use them. And that's basically the argument that I want to put across, and I'll develop it as I go. My name's Tom Allison. I'm a UX researcher and designer, gone by many other titles, but that one captures it. I did my master's in human-computer interaction the University of Michigan School of Information in 2004, and in keeping with my theme, I've had six solid years of zombie persona hunting and neutralizing, and a few failures as well, like maybe we can get into. So, haven't always been a successful zombie hunter. I wasn't sure in preparing this who you were going to be, like who would come in, so I'd like to do just a very quick poll of a couple of items to know how much detail to go into when talking about certain terms of art and such. So how many of you know what personas are? Good, 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 good. Okay. And how many of you have made one? Ever had to? 70%. How many of you use them regularly in your work? Okay, now we're down to about 30%. And how many of you believe in them? meaning you think they should be used.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And that they actually do some good. So that's more than those that use them regularly. But okay, good. We're pretty much in the same ballpark, although I've had talks in the hall this morning with a couple of people that absolutely don't believe in them, so then we might get some good discussion. Yay. Okay, so this is my anatomy of a persona slide that didn't get too well annotated, so, but these are personas. And these are the bits, and you can't read it because of the size. So, the parts, the picture. It's funny to me, and I won't go into it, but how important the picture and the name are. It's not just a description of someone or their context or how they do this and that and so forth. I mean, a persona without a picture isn't a persona. And it doesn't have the same power. And we'll talk about, some of you may already know research that explains why some of these things work in terms of evoking empathy and such, but the picture is really important, the name is really important. Then it gets a little bit less stringent in terms of what it has to have. The content, you want to give any kind of formal title that's relevant to the context. You're trying to get what's the context. And I have here the physical, emotional, and aspirational context surrounding the interaction with the system. That's what you're trying to capture. So if it's in an organization that depends a lot on titles, that helps. And you want to get some sense of who this person is, what they're after, etc. And this is one of the problems with personas for skeptics, that there isn't an absolutely concrete formula for what they are. But this is a good overview, so everybody's on the same page. It sounded like you all knew what I was talking about anyway. I want to distinguish between what I'll call a good persona and a zombie persona. And for me, the good persona is more than just what I just showed you. It's more than just the description and the picture and that poster that you produce at the end. There's also a life cycle in the project that's very important to it. It's you do research to figure out what the personas ought to be, or what's to gather persona points. That's one thing you might keep track of in your notebook when you're doing early research. There needs to be selection. This is, again, I'm preaching about a certain way of using them, but this is what I see as almost an exemplar for the best way. Selection for what's our target for this project or this this application. And I'll talk a little bit about this target persona exercise that I think adds tremendous value and is one way in which to draw value from doing the personas. Then the personas need to be actively referred to during design, during specification, and during acceptance testing. So pretty much everything UX does can benefit from having a persona, having a good persona. Okay, so, and it's important to me, people talk about it as a deliverable or an artifact. Does anybody know, it's a tool embedded in a process. I don't know if there's a good term for that. Maybe that's enough, but it's special in that sense. You do have the poster at the end of the day, but it really has to be part of, an active part of the process, or it becomes a zombie. Okay, this is more on good personas. And this is the target persona exercise, and I don't want to go deep into this, but there's a lot of text on this slide. I won't go deep into this. This is just basically an exercise in an agency I was working with when I first got out of school, so I thought everybody was this advanced in terms of how they use personas and everything else. This I find, in my experience since, to be quite advanced in terms of using personas. What you've got is a bulletin board filled with possible personas for this project. So, and different contexts of use. In this particular project, we decided that the application that was being contemplated in terms of development, the client didn't realize it, but they actually had two very distinct products, two very distinct applications. Here you can't read anything, but it's a research tool, a cell cytometer, it's counting cells. And in research, that was one area. The other area was clinical uses, and they were completely different sets of personas. There's some overlap, but doing this exercise, basically bringing the client in, and as many people from the client side as possible, and just showing them the bulletin board full of sketched out personas. These weren't hugely fleshed out. They were all persona sketches, I'd say. They all had names and they all had pictures. And then we gave them this target. Then they were able, the interaction here that led to the target persona, this is who we want to build at least the first iteration of our product for. These are written all over. This is sort of, we typed it up afterwards. There was a little bit, there were persona points, there was some stuff, but the client team was really engaged by this, where to put them, who is central, who is peripheral. Anybody on this needs to be supported, anybody on the target for that application, but we were looking for who is our primary user, who are we aiming for. So I guess I'm wanting to use this as an example. I really like this exercise, but it's also an example of what I mean by it's not just the poster, it's the process that it's embedded in that's so important. I think, you know, the data that we collected by having the CEO, the technology guys and everybody else with pens and writing all over our personas. I mean, you get persona information from everywhere, and getting them to do this kind of prioritization was huge. So that's an example of a good persona, a persona embedded in the process. So good personas have these characteristics. They result from field observation. You really do need to go see the end user, if at all possible. I mean, you can pick them up from a lot of places, and you shouldn't hesitate just because somebody says, hey, we think some of our users look like this or whatever. You can get personas from everywhere. But From my experience, I can't emphasize enough the value of getting out, seeing the user in their context of use 100% to inform you, and after that, writing up your persona. So the collaboratively selected from a constellation by the project sponsor, that was that target persona exercise I was talking about. That, to me, is huge in terms of project success. Buy-in from the sponsor, also identifying what the what success means. They're well-known, and they're referenced by all the members of the team. And this is starting to get into zombie land, because to me, that they're alive to the project the entire time. You don't make the persona and then put it in the drawer and never see from it again. That's one of the versions of the zombie. And they perform these following very valuable services. The one everybody knows about, engaging empathy for the end user. Again, I don't have the academic vocabulary. Well, I mean, it's not that I don't have the academic vocabulary, but I don't know if anybody studied it, and I don't know exactly how to express it. What's going on when you see a specific name and you see a specific face? But this ability of this, as opposed to just any kind of description, or as opposed to just a written description, to evoke empathy for the end user is huge, and it works for everybody that's involved. So the client, the managers, the developers, the UX, the entire team. This one, to me, maybe I've just been in too many painful meetings, but it shifts discussions about the project away from ego quicksand. So I don't know, has anybody else been in a meeting where the graphic designer or the graphic designers want to argue about shades of a color or font size, where the manager has a favorite font, or where everybody, there's no way to resolve the arguments? I mean, it's not just font. I'm not dismissing that those are important, but without the persona, I mean, friends of mine and I are doing a project right now. We get into these discussions all the time. It's very easy to do. You all have preferences. So if you're only using what I'm going to call zombie personas, that quicksand. So what they do is they guard against zombies, and now I'll get to what. Why do I call them zombies? Was it just to get you to come here because it sounded a little bit less boring than everything else at 3 o'clock in the afternoon? I think they really do share characteristics with zombies. I think it's a decent term. They thrive in obscurity. That's making up the persona and putting it away. I was talking with a company that where I had actually suggested personas. I found out that their marketing department uses them, but nobody else in the company knew that they used them. They each had their own private personas that they stuck away in a drawer. And that was bad for many different reasons. The rest of the company told me, nah, personas, that's I don't know, magic. That's like, there's nothing technical. You can't show me the studies, etc. So they thrive in obscurity. They're not really alive, as I said before, alive to the project. And at the same time, they're very hard to kill. You can't see them, again, sitting in the meetings, or you don't know why. The idea is that when you don't have an expressed persona, everybody's got some model of the user in their head. And they're different. And it's what they're basing their conversation on. And so without bringing that to the surface, without making it explicit, and without getting a common idea as to what the persona, what your target is, that's the hard to kill. They don't seem that dangerous, but they'll eat the brains of your project team. And that's those meetings again, for the most part. I mean, that's the unproductive discussions you get in over things that really, who's to decide? I think in the end, it's usually decided by specialty. Okay, it's a font question, we'll let the art director decide. It's this question, we'll let that person decide. But I think that the persona can help lots with that. So common types of what I'm calling zombie personas. You've probably heard of these before. Well, you've heard of the mirror personas. Mirror personas are the most common. That's so you don't have anything else to reference. How does the developer decide whether he needs to abbreviate or write the word out in full? Well, if he's used that word dev all his life. He knows what it means. And so he's basically using a mirror persona. He's trying to guess what an end user might want, but he's only got his own experience to reference it on. And it's true of everybody else. So the graphics people or the user experience people, everybody has their preferences, their prejudices, if you will. And if they don't, if they're not channeling it through a persona that everybody's agreed on, then they're just reflecting back on what they'd want or what's in their head. The undead personas. This one can be really frustrating. It's a waste of resources. It's a reason, I think, more than anything, that people are against personas or project managers. You spend a lot of time and effort building a persona, and then what do you do with it? Nobody ever looks at it again. It sits in a drawer or on a computer. It might as well not exist. So the undead personas are personas that were created, and they're around in the dark somewhere, but nobody, so you can't say we didn't do personas, but they're not functioning the way they should. Okay, unicorn and Frankenstein personas. These are, again, maybe this is just coming from somebody in the hall this morning mentioned Frankenstein personas. But one of the things that he didn't like about personas is that he felt like there's no judge of their accuracy. There's no way to objectively say this is a good composite. And my sense is this is what you get when you don't do any research. One way you get when you don't do any research. So you're just building it from parts of whatever you find online or whatever you happen to think about. It's your fantasy. And then stupid user personas. That's in many, many quarters the most common zombie persona. The persona that's actually functioning in the project because you haven't explicitly you haven't explicitly made another kind of persona. So I'm noticing that the next slide is this. And I'll just trust my slides for a minute. These are very limited resources. This is not an exhaustive list by any means. But I think Alan Cooper's About Face 2, I mean, if you just want to know what do I look back at when I've got a project and I'm just wanting to make sure I'm hitting all the points or something like that, that's generally what I pull off the shelf. This is just a placeholder to remind me to say there's beginning to be more and more sort of academic research comparing project teams that use personas versus project teams that don't and saying that the personas and the results have been that the personas actually help. So in terms of convincing stakeholders, convincing sponsors, convincing yourself, if you're a skeptic, there is research more now than there has been. And that's one of them. This I found really fascinating because a lot of the discussions I've got into have been we're developing global applications. We couldn't possibly pick a target persona for what we're doing. I mean, we develop it here, we send it out, and people localize it, and we're just way too far, it's too abstract, et cetera, et cetera. This, to me, is a really good case study to make an argument with a lot of people. It's Ford picking a target persona, picking a single woman from Milan who was 27 years old and had this and these pets and et cetera, and this lifestyle to design their car, to design a model of car. So it's hard to, well, for me, I mean, that's an extremely complex undertaking, and they're using this simple model, so to speak. I mean, it has some power, I would say. I was in Ann Arbor, so we're real near Detroit. So Ford is like our model of kind of a conservative, slow-moving, but, you know, I mean, if they're doing it, there's something there, so to speak, I guess. I mean, it just makes it sound much less new agey, depending on who you're talking to. So, and both this talk and the talk where some of that target persona that, again, still my exemplar for how to do this, how to incorporate the persona throughout the life cycle of the product, comes from I gave a talk about Menlo Innovations in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and both of those are available online. So it's possible to go to SlideShare and follow up on anything I rushed through or didn't make sense. Okay, now, my thesis one last time, and just before I came in, I threw a couple more slides on, so I'll wait for questions after just repeating this. So either you're not thinking about the end user at all. It is sometimes the case. You're doing something at a level of technical infrastructure, or there's just no there's a lot of different reasons why the sale can happen without you ever caring about the user, whether it should or not. But then you don't need, then you may not be using personas, or you don't have personas. Or you have a good persona, which again is a selected, it's the persona that we all know and love, plus a process that makes it alive during your whole, or you've got zombies. So that's my, you've always got a persona. Okay, that's one pausing point. Was that much clear? Are there any questions?
Yeah. One question and one note. First, a small thing. You mentioned Alan Cooper's About Face, mm-hmm. and Alan Cooper also wrote a book which he's famous for, I think, and I haven't read it, but I like the title. The Inmates Are Running the Asylum, mm-hmm. and this is a very telling or speaking title. We inmates, he's referring, of course, to the stakeholders, are running the asylum, and personas are the way of getting, as you said, common collaborative sense making. Just that quick thing. And my question is, how do you avoid zombies? Is it just doing your research, or is it there more to it?
Does anybody else know the Inmates Are Running the Asylum? I want to just mention that because I could be wrong. I think he was also talking about the developers being the ones that were...
talking about the developers at Apple and
meaning that they were skewing everything without paying attention to the user, but I mean, your point makes sense too. Remind me of your second point.
How to avoid zombies? Just doing research, or is there more to it?
Well, that's... So the best avoiding of zombie, so the idea is you both need to, it needs to start with research, you need to have a persona, but then you need to do things to make sure that the persona is actually being referenced throughout the life cycle.
Using it in the project, that's
what. Right, so for example, XP, agile methods, when you have story cards, this is my best model for it. Again, I hate to use it as if it were law or whatever. It's just the best example I have. When you have in XP, you can you do that client telling you who the user is or who the target is. Then all the story cards can be written from the perspective of that target persona. And the acceptance by the UX team, at least, is it's based on that story card. So the focus stays very strongly. The whole team knows, the client knows. Everybody knows who the target persona is. So it's keeping them alive in that sense. They don't go in a drawer. They're not being hidden. And there's one other point, this open collaboration. And I had a phrase at some point. Zombies are afraid of the light of the open collaboration. That's a really significant point. I don't think I brought it out. By this anecdote I told about talking to the marketing guy who had personas, the CEO thought that his target end user was the artists that were, because that's who he liked to associate with, the people that were famous that were using his product. The guy from the art department or the marketing department told me he had personas. It was this jerk who was on a trust fund, thought a lot of himself, had a lot, because of his, it was very, fancied himself an artist, and had a lot of friends that he was influential with, had the money to spend on this guy. In other words, it was a pretty negative picture. And I think this is something that, I think personas are a marketing tool, in a sense, so they come from that area, and marketing can get an ugly reputation. And this can happen to personas. I mean, you can get a stupid user just because it's a persona, you can still make your persona a stupid user. But if you keep it in the light of day, if it's up on the wall, so when the client walks in, they see it. If a customer happens to be testing, they see it. If everybody knows what it is, it's just a natural social thing that you figure out ways of wording. Has disposable income, has many friends. You can come around with a sympathetic portrait of the end user. So I think that's another really powerful part of keeping it alive, keeping it in the light, et cetera.
Maybe just fix to prevent undead zombies is to encourage people to hang a poster of the persona all the time. Or if you have a meeting, put it on a poster, but not just on slide. Oh, it says, oh yeah, we've seen this all the time. Next slide.
Yeah.
And just put up a poster so that at every point in the discussion, people can reference to the persona and say, look at it. And what does the persona want to do? Is this the right thing to do right now?
That's been my experience, that makes a much better conversation.
What about role-playing between members of the team? Role-playing between persona? I've never done it.
Right.
I get my team members to do it. would be just doing that rather than saying, I think he would, you say, I don't understand.
I don't have any experience with it either. I mean, to be honest, it's like, you get down, has anybody tried role-playing for evoking?
You're confusing a user scenario with persona. Persona may identify some needs with the individual, but if you're actually going to get into role-playing, you very quickly get into what are the steps in some process that you're trying to solve. It's a very useful tool, but less useful when you're actually developing the personas.
No, but we're talking about using personas in the design process. You're already in the process and you're...
Right, a step I haven't talked about at all would be you'd want scenarios of use next, and I imagine role play, and presumably your role play, you get more value out of it because you've done some defining of who of the persona that you're trying to enact.
At least my answer is because halfway through the project, the designers are losing interest in the personas because they think they know them, they think they accommodate to their needs, but actually they've just dealing with their own problems. So I was thinking that could be one of the ways to kind of
pull them back.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how it is in every context. The only large team context that I've worked in, the acceptance test. So the developers weren't done with anything until they came back to those of us who were the UX the persona originators and said, "Is this done? Does this work?" I don't know if that exists in all contexts or can or whatever, but that tended to keep them thinking. Because they knew that to green dot that sucker, to be done, they were going to have, that's forced empathy, I guess. They were going to have to meet we were going to have to agree that they hit that target. So I think that acceptance test was important in that regard. Okay.
You said you should do the process with personas open for anybody, everybody in the team. But do you think, are there people in the team, in the broader team of developers, designers, etc., from which you want to hide personas?
Who? Wait, are you saying that one does want to hide them, or
yes?
Who do you want to hide them from?
I'm
saying better that you don't hide them, because then you don't get situations like stupid user just expressed as a persona, or anything once it's in a drawer on the computer, only on the hard drive, nobody pays attention to it anymore. So I'm saying the opposite. You don't want to hide it from anybody.
If you have, for example, a programmer or developer, do you think this person can also bring something useful in presence?
Can bring something, can contribute to, if you're saying in terms of shaping the persona,
yeah.
Telling me what this persona actually wants to do, it's in this context. The point is, I mean, at least in these, what I'm advocating is a very open and collaborative environment. Anybody, so for example, XP, anybody can write a story card. Anybody can comment on any of this. It's part of the beauty of having it all out in the open. So there's no wanting to keep anybody from contributing. I mean, somebody is ultimately responsible for editing the persona, and hopefully the client likes what they see. I mean, that's the main goal.
How do you monitor personas when you have some kind of predefined user base? For example, if you're working for policemen or nurses, so they have, you don't have a target user like, I want to have only young men with a certain lifestyle or something, but I want to address every nurse with my product. Do you then just model a generic nurse persona who can have any age or any...
Absolutely not. I mean, that's the magic, or that's, you know, one of the strongest reasons to use the persona, because you have to get specific. They have a name. You can't use demographics. You can't say they have 3.2 children. That doesn't work. So no, I mean, that you do find, and again, when you bring the sponsor or the client or however you call them in and say, I mean, you have very rich conversations. Who needs to be able to use this fundamentally? This scientific instrument that we were working on, it wasn't the technician. The technician would be able to use it if the graduate student could use it. And the faculty member probably was never going to touch it, but would also be able to use it if the student could use it. And the undergraduates didn't need to be able to walk in the lab and use it, or somebody off the street didn't need to be. But so we found that point. So you find, you specifying that target, very specific target persona is, I think, where the power comes from.
So you look for the most critical persona, and then you design for him, and look that all the others also can use it.
Well that's somewhat represented in this target idea. Yeah, you did. I mean, there were personas that you can't exclude. I mean, the PI is probably going to pay for the thing. The technician does have to be able to use it. So you get that sense as well. But then you're talking about the application in, yes, the critical persona, I guess you could call it.
I think one thing which also helps when you have persona, or if you have four personas which are all for nurses or all for doctors, you also have, in the product you sell, if you take market segmentation, so if you see which segment of the market would buy your product the most,
mm-hmm.
it's also one influence of the persona, which really be used for decision making.
I guess it's, in a sense, it's up to the client. But if I understand what you're saying is, I mean, to narrow in on, you do have to select. So whether you're going to go for, only one gender of a certain age and income level, or you're going to go, you can segment in any way you want while you're trying to find your persona. If that's what you're saying, if that's part of the research, but you disagree.
Well, I was just going to say, this is a conversation, I work for a design consultancy, we have this conversation all the time. there are always people trying to suggest, oh, we've got personas already, our marketing department
right.
has done them, and we have to explain that for user experience purposes, personas based on behavior are different from market segments.
That's true.
You're looking at different things, so they're not comparable. I mean, you can't just take a market.
Yeah, you can't take a market segment as the final.
That's what I didn't say. We have our personas, and they are not made out of market segment, but we cross-check against the market segment.
That might be a persona point. A point in the persona might be the market segment they come from. You guys are igniting a lot of conversation.
Because I kind of agree with, in a way, with both, because I have the same kind of experience. I work with an agency, and we have many clients that come to us. And the thing is, market segments are really useful, because it's something they have their own marketing department. And clearly, it is really useful. The thing that we do is we don't dismiss the market segments. We take them.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do is we make them from their behavior point of view. And then we show them, let's say, many times what happens is that three or two segments are one persona. And the way we show to the client this is the case is by taking those segments and analyzing how they will behave when they use a website. That's what a persona is. So we show them, so this is their goals, their drivers, and that's why these three segments actually are, I live. And if they buy into it, we never have problems with this. So if you go from market segment into personas, then you get a buy-in. And what you were saying about the police and the nurses is the same situation. It is too generic. I mean, not all nurses are going to use that website. You need to go, you need to do the research, or you need to understand what is the end purpose of the working, application that you want to
get. If you're working, for example, for a medical device,
It gets complex, I was going to say, in interesting ways. I mean, but if you didn't do any of this, because, I mean, you can't see it again, but the guy who's in the middle is not the guy that's going to buy their product. I mean, so it taught us, this is the guy that's going to make the purchase decision. He's a little bit over. I mean, we need to please him as well, but he's not the guy we're designing the interface for. And it also taught the client that we're not designing the interface for, you know, the people we know the best, because they had the most contact with the faculty, upper level faculty. They have the most contact in an organization with the higher ups. And this is great for drilling down and saying, look, we're talking end users here. So there's a lot of complexity in it in terms of sales and marketing and everything else. But this actually gives you a way of getting those conversations.
I understand that personas is all about communication. What's your experience about personas and the size of a project? I mean, I've heard persona experiences for advisory firms, for instance, mm-hmm. for well-established companies when lots of people or many people are dealing with, are communicating about a project. Coming back to the argument, personas is not an option for 2-3 people projects where communication is easier.
Yeah.
What's your experience and your feedback about this?
Yeah, I had this hallway conversation that I think is on point. Because I'm arguing personas are always there, you can't get rid of them, etc. I think there are some cases where maybe zombies are good enough, or if zombies and people are the same thing, I don't know what to call it. But so you're designing for a very small number of available users. So you have full access to them, and it's a small group. Personas don't tend to make sense then, but remember that you can't just ask them. Because that was the problem with this, inmates are running the asylum. His solution to that was, kidnap a user, stick him in. That doesn't work. But anyway, so you're designing for a small number of users. I don't know that you need to build a persona in that sense. I mean, you can observe them. You can talk.
Narrow, you mean? A very narrow.
No, I mean small number here. Because if it's a huge number that you're after, then I would say that you need a persona. But so the other one is a very small team, and you're designing for the mirror persona. You're designing for yourselves. So you're a group of programmers and you need certain tools and you want to design those and sell them. And I think that's why 37 Signals is successful without any of this stuff. It's because they're designing essentially for themselves, which is a model. It doesn't cover very much of work life or the market for this stuff, but yeah.
I think that's a very dangerous thought because I have seen so much crap in the field of development tools that I don't want to even hear that argument because that gets people very, very, very arrogant.
Oh, you mean that it's okay for us to just develop because we're developing for ourselves?
Yeah.
Okay, well, 37 Signals tends to be the company that gets thrown back to me as they don't use personas, how come they're successful, so I always throw them in there. And so, yeah, basically when zombies are passable representatives of your user group. And then people lie. I think that's Dr. House. I mean, though, inadvertently, for the most part. People don't have conscious access to their learned routines, right? I mean, it's basic cognitive psychology. So getting a real person in the mix, talking with your users, is not a substitute or isn't an adequate substitute, in my mind, for personas. That's why. And that was the last point, so thank you very much.
And we're back. So, Tom, you talked about all this persona things and whatnot. I mean, I remember you gave this talk pretty much at the last minute. You had technical struggles and whatnot. I just want to say it turned out really, really well.
That's very nice to hear.
Also my impression.
Even without all the technical hurdles still, it was a very, very cool talk.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, definitely it was it came together for me too. I mean, so you never know how it's coming across until you get to hear it on a podcast. But I was really happy, I think 15 minutes before I gave the talk, after having worked on it all day, that the basic logic, so we're what, 2 weeks later now, and I still stand by the basic logic in terms of the idea that you can't escape having a persona. Mm-hmm. I think, so I described, we talked about and got a lot of discussion in terms of what a good persona is, but this idea that there's always going to be a persona.
Mm-hmm. Holger, any thoughts about this after some nights of sleeping over that?
I love the way it turned out. I don't know. I mean, the message is clear. You always have a persona, even if in the back of the mind, and it's easier to get everyone on the same page with this. How would you go forward and convince clients or agencies to really use personas as a tool in their development phase?
I mean, it's a good question. I think that I hope to use the argument clearly that they can't escape it. I mean, I think stories of the kind of pain that they've experienced and putting it in terms of zombie personas, for example, can help in terms of convincing them. But
I have two final thoughts about your talk. One thing is we tend to forget things. And I liked your idea that a persona which is living is with you the whole project. And I think it's important to come back. In later concept stages, we have to check if we are still on the right track, because 2 months later, we don't know what we decided in the prior phase. And personas are a good way to look back and see if we are on the right track for that persona or this persona.
Right.
That's one thing. Any thoughts about this?
Well, a couple. I mean, I do think that they're a great evaluative tool, and I think the idea that they're shared widely is important, and the idea that they're not anybody in particular, so they keep egos out of the way, mm-hmm. really helps. I don't want to be a broken record. If you use story cards, if you use Agile, there are very straightforward ways of keeping the persona alive. So if you express all the requirements for a project in the voice of your selected persona, then it stays alive pretty easily. So there's aspects of methodologies that mm-hmm. can help keep it alive rather than just pulling it out at different stages. Mm-hmm.
The second thought I had is, I was in a discussion recently with a colleague of mine, and he said, citing Joshua Porter about his usage life cycle, it's important not to have only one persona, but a persona which evolves. A persona is at one point a first-time user when he or she is a novice, and he becomes an experienced user. And so it's the same person, but
at different stages.
At different stages in usage, yeah.
I mean, it's an interesting way to try to address that evolution of the user. In the times, I talk about having a constellation of users that you select your target from. And I think, for me, in my experience, that's when that discussion happens, is do we need two different interfaces? How are we going to handle that evolution? Because we've got Sarah here who's been using this application or been in this context for years, really knows her way around this stuff, whereas Sam is a new recruit. How do we manage that? That conversation happens up front rather than Sam turning into Sarah, so to speak, mm-hmm. for me. So in at least, and again, all these conversations of how does the interface happen with these two and which of these is really our target, rather than, that's the way I tend to think of it, two different personas, a constellation of personas, rather than the idea of one persona evolving. Mm-hmm. So to me, I don't know if you remember the target board of personas. The more advanced personas are on the board. They may just not be directly the development target. So,
okay,
that's the way I would conceive of that conversation.
Okay, great. Any other thoughts? Otherwise, I suggest we wrap it up.
I'm hoping to come up with some comic book ideas. So the light of collaborative day, there were several phrases that came out of this, and how to kill zombie personas. So
it's your mission to kill all of them.
Yes, exactly. I plan spin-offs.
Okay.
But I've been very happy with how, even looking back, I still pretty firmly stand by a lot of this. So I'm still very happy with it.
Well, that's cool.
Made it up for UX Camp, and yeah, I think I'll stick with it. I'm sticking to it. It's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Okay.
And you convinced some people, I think.
You're the zombie man now. It's your act now.
Exactly. I need to get a t-shirt.
Maybe we can go, call you the Ghostbuster or something like that.
Yeah. Zombie hunter.
Okay, cool. Another nice episode, I think. I enjoyed your talk. Thanks, Tom. And we will see each other next week. Come to our website, uxcafe.de, and leave a comment. Join the discussion and spread the word.
See you next week.
See you.
Bye.
Bye.
UX Cafe.